content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Shadate Hargett-Hill from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from Triangle Business Journal. The cover is Special Report CEO of the Year Awards. 2017 class is filled with leaders across education, law, architecture, and other fields who are vested in their communities. Also on the cover, Rising to Care, Johansson moves up the ranks to forward Holly Hill's mission. Pharmaceuticals, Argos plans one final push for relevance. After weeks of disappointing news, CEO Jeff Abbey at Argos Therapeutics may have found a sliver of hope. The U.S. FDA has given the firm the approval to move its drug trial forward. Cary stares at $550 million mixed-use project. Real estate developers file rezoning papers with Cary to build a North Hills-like project on Carytown Boulevard. Editor's Notebook. Lawmakers file bill to create $100 million fund, the idea to create a fund solely to help businesses grow in rural areas has potential, but parts of the bill need a revision. Those stories and more coming up on the Triangle Business Journal. Let's start with the FDA deal. Our goal is to continue monitoring drug. While troubles have continued for Durham-based Argos Therapeutics, the company has received some hopeful news. In February, an independent data monitoring committee recommended the company discontinue a Phase 3 trial of its lead oncology product candidate for the treatment of metastatic kidney cancer, sinking its stock price more than 65%. But the company says it has met with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration regarding the trial and that the agency has agreed with the company's plans to move the trial forward. The case that was made to the FDA is that we know that there is a delayed treatment effect from our therapy, Argos CEO Jeff Abbey says. Our therapy creates memory T cell response, but the creation of that response takes time, and it doesn't appear to become completely effective until sometime 6 to 12 months after treatment. We don't think there was enough data to determine whether our product is having an effect or not. And the only way to determine that is to collect more data, which means to continue to follow patients longer and continue to wait for additional events to occur in both arms of the trial over time. The company expects to announce further results of the trial later this year, according to Abbey. In March, Argos disclosed it will need to raise additional capital to continue operations. In its first quarter results, filing this week was the SEC. Argos reiterated that capital is needed by the end of this month. We definitely need to raise money in the near term and are planning to do that, says Abbey, adding that the company hopes to have that completed later this month. While Abbey declined to disclose details, he says he is optimistic the company will achieve the financing it needs. He says options include looking to existing and new investors, and that he doesn't believe divestiture of assets will ensue, but that anything is possible. Argos reported a net loss of $24.1 million in the first quarter of this year as compared to a net loss of $12.8 million for the same time in 2016. It stated that it had cash and equivalents of $11.1 million and working capital of $8.5 million as of March 31st. Earlier this year, the company announced a nearly 40% workforce reduction, but Abbey says, "We've been very lucky that we've been able to retain almost all the people we need to continue the ADAPT trial and continue development for the treatment of HIV." Larger vision. Developer details $500 million Cary project anchor by New Wegmans. Raleigh real estate developer Abbott Goodwin, and the South Carolina Development Company, for which he's a partner, Columbia Development Group, have gone back to the drawing boards with their plans for a big new Wegmans anchor development project in East Cary. We definitely found out this project can be more than we initially thought it could be, Goodwin says. In April, Columbia filed its initial rezoning application for the 92-acre state-owned site on Carytown Boulevard, detailing for the first time the company's overall vision for what is being called the Eastern Cary Gateway Project. Goodwin says they're still deciding on a more creative name for the project. All total, the Eastern Cary Gateway Project could have up to 2 million square feet of retail, commercial, multifamily, and hospitality space and value upward of $500 million or more at build-out. On the east side of the site, the Wegmans is a cluster of buildings similar in style to Raleigh's North Hills. It will have a dense mix of street-level retail and restaurants topped by multiple floors of office space, multifamily units, and possibly a hotel. Goodwin says with the zoning change request, they are trying to leave some flexibility as Columbia starts to pitch the plans to potential equity investors, partners, and tenants. On the west side, Columbia is planning a hotel with a restaurant and at least two multi-story office buildings with a minimum of 200,000 square feet and six floors of office space each. Goodwin says the development team is asking the town to not place a height restriction on the office buildings. We think the town wants height and density here anyway, he says. As for the next step, Columbia has a meeting scheduled in July with the neighborhood group surrounding the property, and Goodwin says he expects the project to have its first public hearing with the town in August. The earliest that the rezoning could come up for a town council vote would be in October or November. Now it's time for our cover story. Special Report 2017 CEO of the Year Awards. How the top executives in the Triangle have contributed to the region's economic growth and success. Area leaders who are shaping the course of the Raleigh-Durham region's economic future. This is the letter from the editor. Good leader takes a little more than his share of the blame, a little less than his share of the credit, American author Andrew H. Glasgow. I'm sure this phrase resonates with most of the winners of the 2017 Triangle Business Journal's CEO of the Year Awards. Through vision and leadership, the individuals featured on the following pages have stirred their companies to great success and in turn have helped the Triangle become one of the best places to live, work, and play in the United States. The unique element of this program is that neither a judging panel nor any of our staffers are involved in the selection of the winners. Fellow CEOs and organization heads from around the Triangle vote to select their picks, after which we tally all the votes to come up with the final winners list. We sent out 90 ballots, 40 previous winners, and the current slate of 50 leaders, and the response rate was more than 50%. You will notice this year's winners are from a diverse group of industry, such as real estate, architecture, higher education, law, and many others. For now, sit back, relax, turn the page, and spend a little time getting to know this year's CEO of the Year Awards winners. You can also view the CEO videos on our website, TriangleBusinessJournal.com. Congratulations to all the winners. First Citizens Bank celebrates winners of TBJ's CEO Awards. First Citizen Bank is proud to serve as the title sponsor for the 2017 CEO of the Year Awards. Through these awards, we seek to recognize excellence, identify innovation, highlight best practices, and showcase the leadership and outstanding contributions of top executives and CEOs across the Triangle. Great executives must be more than inspirational motivators. They must bring their own brand of knowledge, experience, and communication skills, and combine them with a unique vision to bring about a winning strategy. At First Citizens, we've built strong relationships with companies, large and small, over the years, and we continue to work hard to understand and to meet their unique financial needs. Just as First Citizens is known for delivering its Forever First promise, which includes a commitment to stability, dependability, and attention to the needs of its customers, the CEO Award recipients consistently demonstrate a similar commitment to their teams, their community, and the industries in which they excel. As a Triangle headquartered company, it's a great honor for us to help recognize these remarkable individuals and organizations. Their work is making profound impact, not only in the Triangle, but throughout the state, the nation, and the world. Congratulations to all our well-deserving honorees. Christine Young, North Carolina Central Region Executive, First Citizens. Anita Brown Graham, UNC School of Government. Anita Brown Graham always sports a smile on her face, well, almost always. Spend a little time with her and one realizes it is a perfect way to disarm myopic thoughts in people. She wins with compassion and listening skills. The 44-year-old executive who ran NC State University's Institute for Emerging Issues for a decade until last year may not work at the James B. Hunt Jr. Library on a daily basis anymore, but she is filled with emotions when she visits. By the time I left IEI, it was fivefold in size, she says. This space allowed people to come and get inspired by stories of people from North Carolina. This state changed from a Rip Van Winkle state to a global powerhouse. Brown Graham, a lawyer by training, was recognized by President Barack Obama in 2013 when he bestowed Brown Graham as a champion of change for her work at the IEI. The award is given to ordinary Americans doing extraordinary things in their communities to out-innovate, out-educate, and out-build the rest of the world. The coolest part of it all, to tell you the truth, was being with the other people who were also receiving the award, she told an African-American publication at NC State at the time. All of the very inspirational work happening in a range of different ways causes you to say, wow, I'm just happy to really be in this room with these people and have the chance to learn about what they're doing and to make connections and to be able to pick up the phone and call them later. And that's just it. While Brown Graham has been successful with her work, she is quick to point out that she only provides the playing field for people to come together and make their communities better through smart thinking. I am good at building consensus and bringing people together, she says. I am a really good listener. I really want to understand other people's perspectives. That allows people to create a sense of trust with me. Today, Brown Graham works for the UNC School of Government to lead a special initiative that seeks to expand UNC's capacity to work with public officials on policy issues that affect communities across the state. Brown Graham acknowledges that the environment is much different at UNC than what she created at IEI. It's very traditional. It's a very quiet building, she says, but I am working on it. So she is doing what she does best, bringing change, a different perspective, and challenging the norm. And most likely, she will succeed. Toshni Ann Dubroy, Shaw University, age 36, birthplace Jamaica, education, associates in Kingboro Community College, BS at Shaw University, MBA at Rutgers University, PhD, NC State University. Family members, husband Dale, daughter Marley Jolie. Toshni Ann Dubrow is no stranger to the limelight, and she's been making her presence known as president and CEO of Shaw University since she began in the post in the summer of 2015. But it's what she's doing to increase the presence of Shaw University that is gaining the most attention in its Raleigh home and beyond. and it's the reason she's being recognized with a Triangle Business Journal CEO of the Year Award. DeBrow's efforts to set Shaw on solid financial footing and inject energy back into the university have been gaining traction over the 22 months she's been at the helm. The institution struggled with leadership and financial stability for several years, with five presidential transitions since 2009. With my appointment, the statute of limitations on our fiscal inefficiencies has expired, stated DeBroy at the time of her hire. In the past year, DeBroy has focused a mountain of effort on fundraising. Following Shaw's receipt of a grant from the A.J. Fletcher Foundation, DeBroy committed to matching it through working to raise $200,000. Last summer, DeBroy announced that a 3-year salary reduction program for employees of the university would be lifted. Shaw University is headed in the right direction, she now says. DeBroy and her team have been able to build the total enrollment back up. It now sits at around 1,850 students. I'm leading a business that is in some senses a turnaround business, and in others, we're just continuing a legacy that our forefathers built for us, DeBroy says. She considers her greatest accomplishments over the past year to be the lifting of the faculty and staff salary reduction and the adoption of a new mantra developed to equip students and the surrounding area with tools for starting and sustaining small businesses. And in 2016, DeBroy was named the second most influential historically black college and university president by HBCU Digest. Her 5-year goal is to have transformed the HBCU landscape by creating what she calls an innovative, sustainable financial model that is replicable nationwide. Fred Eshelman, Furex Eshelman Ventures, company Eshelman Ventures LLC, age 68, birthplace High Point, education BS in pharmacy, UNC Chapel Hill, Farm D, University of Cincinnati, residency Cincinnati General Hospital, OPM program Harvard Business School. Family members, wife April, daughters Kimberly and Ashley. First job, furniture warehouse hauling industrial flour and dowel pens. Observing the 68-year-old Fred Eshelman, one can easily draw two quick conclusions. He doesn't like to waste time, and he does not mince words when he talks business. In pharmaceutical circles, Eshelman is best known for founding PPD, the Wilmington-based contract research organization that helps drug companies develop and test experimental new drugs. After a stint on Wall Street, PPD was taken private in a $3.9 billion deal in 2011. Eshelman owned 7.8% of PPD, which would put his stake in the deal worth north of $300 million. While at PPD, Eshelman spun out Furex, a company developing a treatment for IBS, or irritable bowel syndrome. Furex was acquired in a $1.5 billion deal. In that sell alone, he made $270 million. Now he has Eshelman Ventures, which bets on new companies and discoveries in the hope of changing healthcare. I got lucky. I was at the right place at the right time, and good people surrounded me, and the rest is history, he says humbly. But he wants more, not necessarily for the chase of the money, but to create or discover something that could be a game changer. Eshelman is quick to note that while he works long hours, his passion for helping UNC Chapel Hill's pharmacy school may be among the top in terms of satisfaction. Just 3 years ago, he pledged $100 million to the pharmacy school to fuel innovation. By the time of the announcement, Eshelman already had donated $38 million to the school, which was renamed after him about 9 years ago. Eshelman's impact on business in North Carolina reaches far from just PPD, Furex, and all the entrepreneurial drug discovery ventures he bets on a monthly basis. Eshelman and Quintellis founder Dennis Gillings jump-started an industry from their offices in Wilmington and Chapel Hill that eventually led to thousands being employed across the globe. And yet, their similarities ended just there. Dr. Gillings and I played off one another. Our strategies were actually different. He, Gillings, may disagree with me. Eshelman says he was all about getting outside capital in, big banks, growing the top line, going overseas and all that stuff. All very good ideas. Eshelman adds, I cared much less about the top line than I did what came out at the bottom. I always have been a cash flow guy. Cash is king. Sitting at his Front Street office with the river-facing PPD headquarters building in the background, Eshelman looked comfortable in his own skin. He is aware of his success and aware that his charitable contribution will one day change things in the future. But still, one gets the sense he is not done yet. With a smile, he will insinuate that there is still one big deal left in him, or maybe two. David Fountain, Duke Energy. For David Fountain, Duke Energy isn't just a job, it's a mission. As the president of the company's North Carolina operation, he serves about 85 counties. The best part of being CEO is to really promote our mission of providing safe, reliable, affordable, customer-focused energy solutions, he says. It's about keeping the lights on. The worst part, when a crisis hits, and Fountain's company has seen its share of negative headlines in recent years, the hits have taught him some valuable advice he can share with fellow CEOs. It's so important to do the right thing and be accountable for your actions. The actions, the communication, the actions of the organizations, and then communicate your plans to address the situation, he says. He says that since 2009, the company has delivered more than $650 million worth of energy efficiency savings. He equates it to an economic stimulus package for North Carolina. A lot of people don't realize, and I've enjoyed sharing this, our electric rates here in North Carolina are about 20% below the national average, he says. If you think about that, that's significant in the way that it drives economic development and the way it's powering the state is changing. Since 2009, the company has retired half of its coal fleet. It has been making investments in other parts of its portfolio, such as natural gas, a mechanism that could get a major boost by the Atlantic Coast Pipeline, of which Duke is an investor. But solar, too, is a major contributor, he says. Fountain says people shouldn't be surprised at its forays into renewable energy. After all, that's where Duke got its start. And Duke operates six different nuclear sites in the Carolinas, including the facility in Holly Springs. As we think about additional nuclear in the future, the most efficient way to have nuclear generation is to continue to have generation from the existing fleet, he says. So we're looking at options to relicense part of our fleet. We're also preserving the option to potentially construct a new nuclear plant. Fountain also is particularly interested in emerging technologies. He points to Duke's efforts to boost electric vehicle market share, such as the electric vehicle charging stations it's been building across the Carolinas. Fountain predicts electric buses will be status quo in the coming years, pointing to a recent Duke investment in the city of Greensboro for high-speed charging stations for its bus fleet. In the meantime, his team is constantly working to keep the lights on, he says. Storms such as the monstrous Hurricane Matthew in 2016 teach his team lessons for the future. It helps Duke prioritize its grid investments in ways that continue to harden it against future storms. It's fun to be a part of a mission that matters, he adds. Phil Freelon, Perkins Plus Will. Company, Perkins Plus Will, age 63, birthplace, Philadelphia, education, bachelor's in environmental design, NCSU, master's of architecture, MIT, Family members, wife, Nina, 3 children, 5 grandchildren. Durham architect Phil Freelon has spent most of his professional career chasing and winning some of the most prominent public projects in cities all across the country. His designs have been used for the National Center for Civil and Human Rights Museum that opened in Atlanta in 2014. The Museum of African Diaspora in San Francisco that opened in 2005, and even the Durham Bulls Athletic Park that opened in 1995 in Durham. Freelon and his firm have also been chosen to design the $50 million expansion of the Motown Museum in Detroit. But a crowning achievement of his career was capped in September when the Smithsonian Institute opened its iconic $500 million National Museum of African American History and Culture on the National Mall in Washington. Freelon and his firm were the lead designers for the 6-story building that looked more like 10 years to conceptualize, fund, and construct. That project was a long time coming for us, Freelon says. It was a culmination of great collaboration of my firm and multiple partners, consultants, and large team of professionals, and we're very proud of that. A native of Philadelphia, Freelon says he knew very little about the field of architecture when he enrolled at NC State University's College of Design, which was later followed with graduate studies at MIT and Harvard University. But it was a field where he says he found a perfect marriage of his interest in art and the drafting and technical design skills he had been introduced to in high school. It lighted a fire in everything I had hoped to be and more, he says. He returned to the Triangle in the 1980s and started his own firm, the Freelon Group. In Durham in 1990, which he merged with the internationally known design from Perkins plus Will in 2014. Freelon, who was diagnosed with ALS in 2016, announced this month that he will be stepping out of his role as managing director of the firm's practices in Durham and in Charlotte, which have a combined staff about 60 people, and passes the baton to one of his proteges, Zena Howard, who was also heavily involved in the Smithsonian project. Freelon will continue as design director for the firm's North Carolina operations. Fred Hutchison. Hutchison, PLLC, age 67, birthplace Maryville, Tennessee, education BS, business administration, UNC Chapel Hill, JD University of Virginia, family members, wife Nancy, daughters Ann and Kay, granddaughters Helen and Hadley, first job, Covington and Burling, Washington, D.C. For Fred Hutchison, counseling companies through formation, growth, and exit is a normal day at the office. Early in his legal career, Hutchison spent 5 years practicing in Washington, D.C. at Covington and Burling. He returned to the Triangle practicing at Moore and Van Allen when a Greater Raleigh Chamber of Commerce meeting ultimately led to the formation of the Council for Entrepreneurial Development in 1984. CED, a nonprofit organization, looks to connect and grow entrepreneurs in the Triangle. While CED continued to thrive, so did Hutchison's legal career. Hutchison's joined Patrice Stockton and Robinson, now Kilpatrick, Townsend, and Stockton, in 1986, spearheading the firm's Raleigh office. A decade later, he founded his own firm, Hutchison PLLC, where he remains today. The firm has offices in Raleigh, Atlanta, and Gainesville, Florida. The overall bulk of our work is representing companies and getting them started, getting them financed, getting them moving, and eventually hoping for a good exit for them, he says, noting that last year was significant in terms of the volume of work the firm saw in fundraising and M&A transactions. And the M&A is good news, he says, because our clients, when they raise money, they prosper, and almost all of them are built to be sold. When they take outside money, it means at some point they've got to have an exit to get the money back to their investors, he says. We had some good exits for clients, he says, of the last year, and that always makes us feel good. As for companies raising that money, Hutchison says he always wishes there was more capital in North Carolina. At the same time, he says, generally speaking, capital markets are pretty efficient. If you got something really good, the money will come find you. John Jernigan, Smith Anderson, age 74, birthplace Atlanta, education BA, Davidson College, JD UNC, Chapel Hill. Family members, wife Virginia, Ginger, McKinney Jernigan, daughter Lee Ashley Bonfield, son Frank McKinney Jernigan, grandson William or Liam Thomas Bonfield Jr. First job, U.S. Army Captain Air Defense Artillery. John Jernigan, former managing partner of Smith Anderson Blunt, Dorset, Mitchell & Jernigan, currently serves as chairman of the firm. In addition to his leadership position at the Raleigh firm, Jernigan has long focused his practice in areas that included corporate governance as well as mergers and acquisitions. We like to think of accomplishments in terms of our clients' accomplishments, and one of the advantages of gifts that our law firm has is wonderful clientele, Jernigan says. As for his professional goal for the coming year, that's easy, he says. My goal is to strengthen our law firm and to protect and enhance our wonderful reputation, says Jernigan. That's my goal last year, and that's my goal this year. Outside of Smith Anderson, Jernigan has been involved with a number of community and education organizations over the years, including the North Carolina Bar Association, the Davidson College Board of Advisors, the North Carolina Symphony Foundation, and the Supreme Court Historical Society. He also enjoys counseling young lawyers in terms of career opportunities in the field. I do enjoy talking with young law students or young lawyers, particularly in our law firm, about their career to try to help them focus on the value of looking at the long term, says Jernigan. This is definitely a journey, and with it comes much privilege and much opportunity, but you've got to stay with it. The recipe for a successful law firm or business is simple. According to Jernigan, things can't change during the course of a day, a week, a year, but the principles of what makes a law firm or business organization great are timeless. He says, having a law firm with many good, strong people in it, as we do, reinforces that every day. Bob Kloss, Durham Performing Arts, entity DPOC. Age 58, birthplace Laramie, Wyoming, education BS in advertising, University of Florida. Family members, wife Kim, son Sam, daughter Ellie. First job, dishwasher at Red Lobster. Breaking attendance records is becoming more common at Durham Performing Arts Center. And General Manager Bob Kloss says DPOC has sustained its reputation as a venue known for its red carpet service thanks to the hundreds of workers going out of their way to build an exceptional customer experience. Kloss has led DPOC since it opened in 2008. The venue, which has 2,700 seats, posted record-breaking attendance last year with a crowd of about 500,000. And even though it continues to best its own records, DPOC consistently lands near the top of industry reports covering similar-sized venues for attendance and sales. These big superstar shows, these biggest entertainers, they can play anywhere in the country, Kloss says. To bring those big superstar shows to the Triangle, you've got to have great audiences. You've got to have a great theater. You've got to be able to bring audiences to see these big shows. Since opening, DPAC's been one of the best in the country at doing just that. Kloss, who grew up in Florida and majored in advertising, says his career in entertainment began when he worked on a stage crew while in school. He later went on to manage other venues, including Walnut Creek Amphitheater in Raleigh. Entertainment has really been my life. Being part of big events is something that's very special to me, he says. The best part of my job is that every day is different. We have new shows we're adding all the time. There are new challenges in terms of how do we make the experience better? How do we improve this theater? How do we add new elements to productions? Those challenges are the focus of Kloss and his team's next steps for DPAC. This summer, the revenue will close for 5 weeks while it undergoes a $1.5 million in renovations. Among the improvements are new seats and carpet. We'll still have our signature red carpet, Kloss says. Michael Landguth, RDU International Airport, age 50, birthplace Bermuda, education master's in aeronautical science from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. Family members, wife Paige, daughters Ashley and Jennifer. First job, Smoky Glen Farm, a catering company for large outdoor company picnic. As CEO of the Raleigh-Durham International Airport Authority, the managing entity behind Raleigh-Durham International Airport, Michael Landguth isn't just leading the day-to-day operations of the campus. These days, he's lobbying, trying to get the state on board to help fund the growth at RDU, something he says is pivotal to the region, not just to travelers. He points to his estimated $8.5 billion in economic impact. While we've got some pretty good service today, we want to grow it. We want to make it better, he told a recent crowd at the Research Triangle Regional Partnership State of the Research Triangle Region event. At the center of RDU's plan to do just that, entitled Vision 2040, is a planned revamp of the airport's longest runway. At 10,000 feet, the runway called the most important 2 miles of pavement in the state by Landguth supports both the RDU's transatlantic flight services. Without it, those flights, including the recently secured nonstop service to Paris, could be in danger with the current runway is nearing its end of life. So Landguth's team has been encouraging the legislature to secure funding. The runway alone could cost upwards of $350 million, he said. And so far, his efforts do not appear to be in vain. The new Senate budget proposal includes more than $50 million for RDU's runway project. The Federal Aviation Administration has a program that can provide up to 75% of the cost for large-scale projects at airports. And the runway is just Landguth's latest priority. Under his leadership over the past several years, RDU has added several high-profile connections, including the recently secured flight to Austin, Texas. A recently released report from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology points to RDU as providing the best connectivity among all medium-sized airports. It is not just the number of nonstop routes that matter in facilitating economic activity. It is also the quality of the connectivity, said William Shellbar, research engineer at the MIT International Center for Aviation, in a statement on the report. The improvements in air service and connectivity, both domestically and internationally at RDU, is a linchpin in growing the region's economic health. Robert Luddy, Captive Air Systems. Age 71, birthplace Miami, education BS in finance, LaSalle University. Family members, wife Maria, daughter Julie Roach, son Randy Ludley. First job, worked on a bread delivery truck in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania at age 11. During his 41-year journey as founder of Raleigh's Captive Air Systems, Robert Luddy has seen his share of ups and downs. I started the company with $1,300, and on that day I spent $1,000, so I was only with $200 in the bank on starting day, says Luddy. That was on a Tuesday. 4 days later, he made his first installation of a fire suppression system. The check for that first system bounced. The early years were tough, Luddy says. And if Luddy thought times were tough in 1976, they were only getting worse in 1981. It was a very hard time for the country. We were in a recession and I was unable to make payroll, he says. But shortly after June 30th of that year, Luddy went to the company's post office box to find a check for $28,000, exactly what he needed to make payroll. The commercial kitchen ventilation systems company now employs 1,100 across a total of six U.S. manufacturing plants. It expects to bring in $450 million in sales this year. The company has a product development center in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and competes with big names in the HVAC businesses such as Trane HVAC systems. As a larger company, we know Captive Air will be in business tomorrow or next year, says Luddy. And Luddy has found time to lean toward his passion, education. The passion came to him while working at Captive Air. When we had this woman working in our office who didn't know her ABCs, he says, Luddy decided to do something for the children and students who have been underserved in the school systems. In 1998, Luddy opened a charter school, the Franklin Academy, which now has more than 1,600 students. He also founded Thales Academy, which now has six campuses and offers education to students in pre-K through 12th grade. Growing up in a family of eight children, Luddy realized that he wanted to get anywhere in life. He would have to use his own resources. That experience has influenced his professional life. You have to do things at the best possible cost. And at times you have to do them at no cost because the resources were simply not there, he says. His business mentality is to keep the cost low and have the highest possible quality. I view it as my job to not only maintain the purity of the organization, but to delve deeper on how the organization and how we can deliver our products at a higher quality and lower cost. He says, most people I meet in America don't think in that mentality. As CEO, Luddy still considers himself an entrepreneur. He runs Captive Air on a lean structure, but keeps employees motivated with perks, such as having employees available for bonuses every month, depending on performance reviews. People want to work for winners, he says. Steve Malik, North Carolina FC, age 52, birthplace Swansea, United Kingdom. Education, BSBA, UNC Chapel Hill. Family members, Kathleen, Jordan, Skylar, Macy, and Samantha. The furniture of soccer in the Triangle pivoted in October 2015 when entrepreneur Steve Malik bought the struggling Carolina Railhawks from Traffic Sports USA. Malik, who had sold MedFusion for $91 million, was already thinking about how he could land a Major League Soccer franchise even before the purchase. I felt like somebody needed to step in, he says. I feel like we need pro sports in the area. I really tried to put my shoulder into this thing and do something for the community. Sweeping changes came after Malik took over. Malik changed the team's name to North Carolina FC, acquired a women's team from New York, and announced a pursuit for an MLS expansion franchise. He also led the merger of the Capital Area Soccer League and Triangle Football Club Alliance under the North Carolina FC umbrella. I don't want to do anything unless it's at the highest level, says Malik, a native of Kinston who graduated from UNC Chapel Hill. Malik is confident that the Triangle's affluent mix of soccer moms, millennials, and internationals will appeal to MLS. The league expects to expand expand by 2 franchises this year and then 2 more after that. It's easy to sell the market, Malik says. We've got a lot of benefits. Significant hurdles remain. The expansion fee is a whopping $150 million. Malik needs to nail down a location, plus fund a stadium that would seat 22,000 at first and be expandable to 28,000. Everybody knows an urban location would be a great option for us, he says, and we've got a lot of urban location. He also knows the bid must show MLS. It has significant corporate support. To shore that up, the bid has launched a group of ambassadors led by Capital Broadcasting Vice President Jimmy Goodman to boost interest and support. There are a dozen markets in the hunt for a franchise, but he remains confident that the MLS wants to be in the triangle. They know we are a soccer city, he says. Mark Noel, Noel Group LLC, age 64, birthplace, Upin, Belgium, education, MBA, University of Cologne, Germany. Family members, wife, Cecile, children, Judith, Michael, Wendy, grandchildren, Alistair, Penelope, Molly May, and Riley. First job, assistant to President Les Fleches Rienes, Belgium. Stop and think for a moment about products such as synthetic wine closures, pool noodles, foam rollers, foam bedding. All of these things are now commonplace in our area and are used quite regularly by some. The innovation that brought these products to the masses stemmed from the mind of Mark Noel, chairman of Noel Group LLC and the founder and executive chairman of Nomaco. Noel, a Belgian immigrant, leads the now Zebulon-based firm and his sister company, Normacork LLC, and he and his companies have since revitalized the eastern Wake County town by pumping its base with money and jobs. When Nomaco was moved to the Triangle, it had about $4 million in sales. Now that sales figure has grown to more than $200 million. Normacork started in 1999 after the move to the Triangle. It now sells about 2.6 billion closures per year, about half of which stems from its North Carolina operations. And in early 2015, he broke ground on a 20,000 square foot speculative flex and an industrial building at the Triangle East Business Park in Zebulon. The ultimate goal, Noel said at the time, was the build out of Triangle East's other properties and the addition of walking trails and other park amenities that could connect into Zebulon Park facilities. The 8 undeveloped lots, he said, could accommodate a maximum 180,000 square feet of new industrial and office space next to the Nomaco and Nomacork plants that already employ about 500 employees. We don't grow companies for the sake of growth. We try to do what's right for the marketplaces, and then the growth is the consequence of it, Noel says. Noel founded Nomaco originally as a subsidiary to his father's company, NMC in Belgium, and he's charting a course for future generations of his family to continue the progression. All of his children are now involved in the company and making it a stronger growth driver for Zebulon and the surrounding areas. In the past year, the company also developed a line of joint filler products used in the construction industry. Community leadership outside the walls of the company is also a major point of emphasis for Noel and his crew. But the Noel family and Nomaco are active contributors to Wake Med Children's Hospital, the Zebulon Boys and Girls Club, Read and Feed, Kids Notes, and the Frankie Lemon School and Development Center. Roger Perry, East West Partners, age 67, birthplace, Fayetteville. Family members, wife Linda, sons Ben and Lee, daughters-in-law Amy and Ashley, grandchildren Allie, Jane, Louisa, Hannah, Clark, and Lau. First job, picking worms, age 11. Roger Perry was in the third grade in 1957 when the UNC Chapel Hill men's basketball team won the school's first NCAA championship, and Perry decided he would be a Tar Heel for life. As it turns out, it was a decision that would help guide, direct, and influence his and the university's future over the course of the next 50 years. He based his company, the East West Partners Real Estate Development Firm, next to the UNC Finley Golf Club in 1985 after he had stints in South Carolina and Virginia, learning the ins and outs of real estate sales and development from former partners of the Sea Pines Company. Perry's East West Partners has since helped build nearly 15,000 homes, condos, and apartment units, plus retail and commercial centers across the North Carolina, valued at close to $4 billion. Its projects have included the 435-acre Meadowmount mixed-use community in Chapel Hill, the 800-acre Woodcroft Housing and Commercial Development in Durham, the Ura Point and Old North State Club Golf Course Community in New London, and the 246-unit Liberty Warehouse Apartment Project in downtown Durham. In May, East West Partners broke ground on its first development project in Wilmington, the $78 million River Place Condo, Apartment, Retail, and Parking Deck Project downtown. In 2003, Perry was tapped to fill a vacant seat on the UNC Chapel Hill Board of Trustees, later serving 2 years as its chairman and helping guide the direction for the university's future Carolina North Campus. He is also a co-chair of the university's upcoming campus-wide fundraising campaign, launching in fall 2017, which is expected to eclipse the school's Carolina First campaign in 2007 with pledges of $2.38 billion. I've gotten way, way more out of it than I have given, Perry says of the time and money he's given to the university over the years. After business and family, it is a single thing I have enjoyed the most in life. I wish that they would ask me to do more. And I'm going to abbreviate the last two for time's sake. Steve Schuster, Clearscapes, age 66, birthplace Hammond, Indiana. Family members, wife Mary Ann Howard, first job, delivered newspapers at the age of 9. Raleigh has changed in dramatic ways since architect Steve Schuster arrived as a student at NC State University, and Schuster has been in the center of that change. Schuster graduated from NC State in 1973, got a master's degree in architecture from the University of Colorado in 1977, and eventually circled back. The reason that Raleigh has been attractive to me is one could see it was on a trajectory of growth, Schuster says. It's one of those places in our country where the biggest days are in our future, not in our past. That's not always the case. I enjoy the part of design as well the leadership part of designing a process that can be effective. Schuster is the founding principal of Clearscapes, remembers being one of the early people to live downtown and how he and his wife often had their car windows smashed in. That changed, and Schuster and Clearscapes would play a major role in changing the dynamics of downtown. Clearscapes is the architect for Union Station, now rising in Raleigh's Warehouse District. Trains are going to arrive in January. A. Hope Williams, NC Independent Colleges and University, age 62, birthplace New Bern. Family member, husband Thomas Bersender, sons Jonathan and Edward, daughter-in-law Gabriella, first job Belk Hinsdale in Fayetteville. Hope Williams joined the North Carolina Independent Colleges and Universities in 1986, working her way up to president in 1992. As president, Williams helped with the statewide advocacy and fundraising of 36 independent and private colleges at universities in the state. Williams says one of the biggest challenges for students and faculty is the question of affordability. College costs continue to increase, and students expect to have state-of-the-art technology and everything a student needs to start a position as they go to work, she says. The NCICU helps students by offering thorough federal and state support as well as scholarships. This means the means to provide what students need. The average debt in North Carolina for undergraduate students is $25,000, says Williams, and the national average is $30,000. So we're better than the national average, which is good. Williams received her undergraduate degree in history and French from Duke University, as well as an MPA from NC State University and a PhD in education from UNC Chapel Hill. Still, she says, sometimes women in executive positions face huge challenges. Women do face challenges that historically men have not faced, but it is becoming less of an issue, says Williams. I've been in many situations where I have been the only woman in the room, and quite frankly, that didn't bother me at all. As far as advance for young women, Williams says to be bold, work with those people around you and develop networks. But that advice goes to all genders. I have had mentors who have been men and women. I still do, says Williams. I think all of us need mentors regardless of the point in our careers. When Williams isn't hard at work, she enjoys spending time with her family. Her two sons both live in New York, and she adores the time they have when the family all gets together back in North Carolina. I've given up on balance a long time ago, she says. Now I'll go for harmony. Williams was named the 1999 Distinguished Woman of North Carolina in Education, Women Extraordinaire, by Business Leader magazine in 2005, and was one of the winners of Triangle Business Journal's Women in Business Awards in 2001. And we're going to a quick story. Gosh, that's a lucky cat. More than 100 cat lovers gathered at Raleigh's Dock 1053 on May 10th for a novel way to help the safe haven for cat shelter. Six designers created modern cat houses, and the homes were auctioned off with a top seller, a design by Grant Newton of Greensboro, going for $1,150. The auction raised $4,525, and their entire event raised nearly $5,000. Meredith College seeks to entrepreneurial spirit. Meredith College in Raleigh is jumping into the entrepreneurial game. The Raleigh School for Women will offer a minor in entrepreneurship for undergraduates beginning this fall. And starting next summer, Meredith's co-ed MBA program will have a concentration in entrepreneurship and family business. Well, we've run out of time for this episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. I'm Shadate Hargett Hill for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time.